Whether you're looking to build a website for your business, your hobby, your podcast, or just for fun, Pear Networks is your go-to web hosting partner. Not only do we have the lowest domain price in the industry, starting at just $11, we've got hundreds of stunning website templates to help you stand out from the crowd. You're not a techie? Not a problem. With our easy DIY site builders, you can launch your impressive website without any technical know-how. And when it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. Check out pear.com today to learn more. PAIR.com.
They were the heroes from the future. Teenagers protecting the universe from those that would sow the seeds of chaos. Each had unique powers and abilities. And though they often had their differences, they came together to save the day as the Legion of Superheroes. Now, you can be a part of their adventures and learn the history of the future in the Legion Clubhouse.
This week in the Legion Clubhouse, Matthew, we not only have a big anniversary issue, but we also have two Legionnaires finally tying the knot.
It's a wedding, everybody!
Superboy number 200, the Legionnaire Bride of Starfinger. Published January-February 1974, written by Kerry Bates with art by Dave Cochran. Synopsis: tragedy leads to a wedding, which leads to more tragedy.
Oh, poor Chuck Tane. He's out of the Legion again.
I am so annoyed that Chuck, Bouncing Boy, the heart, well, the spleen of the Legion.
The gallbladder of the Legion, because it turns out we really don't need him after all.
Well, and that's kind of the thing. You really don't need Chuck, but I always enjoyed Chuck, and I feel like Chuck is one of those characters that even now is emblematic of the Silver Age. People say, well, you remember the Silver Age Legion? They were goofy. They had Bouncing Boy.
Well, they also had Arm Fall-Off Man.
No, they didn't. Arm Fall-Off Boy is from the 90s, and he's a parody character. Don't even get me started on him. But yeah, you have that moment of Chuck leaving, at least for me, being sad. You know, it's like the end of an era.
I'm sure he'll be back in like 20 issues. Here's the thing that's a problem. It just
it's
opens.
It's actually 30 issues, Mr. Oh, okay. Smarty Man.
All right, well, there you go. Sorry. Oh, I stand corrected. Ah, 10 issues. That's like one whole year. Or in this case, if they're still doing bi-monthly, it's like, that'll be two whole years. Here's the thing. They kind of hand wave why he lost his powers.
Yeah, there's no real explanation. He's just like, well, you don't have any powers anymore. Brainiac 5 tells him, oh, you're stupid and everybody hates you. But yeah, I do like the fact that it starts with Brainiac saying, this is one of the Legion's saddest days, which is kind of selling they're losing a friend. But I got to tell you, this whole story feels like, really, it feels like, no, it feels like Carrie going, okay, who's the weakest here? I don't like having so many people. I'm going to get rid of some people. Who can I get rid of? Who sucks? And well, it really feels like that throughout this issue that they're like, let's pick Chuck and Lou and get them the hell out of here because they suck.
Yeah, it just is kind of funny considering who can we not put in this issue when in a couple of pages we'll get to everybody in this DC universe is in this issue. So Chuck then does a slow Hulk walk and he winds up in the Vista Tape library. Now, please, I know we've seen the Vista Tapes before or the Visi Tapes before. Mm-hmm. But how do these work? Are these pulling from your memories or is this part of the mass surveillance state that the United Planets has become?
It's never entirely clear, but the way it's played in this issue is some serious Philip K. Dick chiz, because you go through this and Chuck is thinking about a time where he's hanging out and playing with Lornu, just playing volleyball with himself in the yard. And no, that's not a euphemism. They're literally batting him back and forth. But it's horrifying in retrospect to look at this because it's sweet. And then, you know, the duo damsels kiss him and then they run off and go, oh, we like you. You sure are awesome. And he's like, let's go back to the clubhouse and have some lemonade. And at the end, you cut back to regular Chuck sitting in a chair watching these horrifying just like surveillance tapes of his most private moments.
That's what I'm really curious about, because if these are your memories kind of basically put onto a holodeck and recorded for you, that's one thing. But if this is really the surveillance state and not we will remember it for you wholesale, that is really, really weird. Because not so this issue not only, and I think it's the next issue as well, not only has the visit tapes, but they also do a thing with Lornu later in the issue where Brainiac starts to go into her brain to figure out what happened, and they start projecting what's going on her brain onto the TV screen. They also do this in the in next the next episode of the Legion Clubhouse with Invisible Kid. So that seems to be more we will remember it for you wholesale. This just seems like surveillance
this is like
state.
The Adjustment Bureau. This is like pre-crime stuff. This is we are going to watch every second of your life.
Yeah, no, it's definitely we are recording everything. And, you know, granted, the Big Brother is watching idea has been around since before this issue came out. It goes all the way back to Fahrenheit 451 in 1984. And, you know, the idea of the surveillance state was pretty big in the post-50s, early 60s as CC television became really important in Great Britain and how they just kind of mass covered London with a lot of these CCTV cameras, and which is still in place today. And we, of course, see this all over major metropolises here in the United States today. And a lot of people complain about it, but we're seeing maybe some of the pros and cons of visit tapes in the future. And I don't know, that's just kind of disturbing if you can say, hey, computer library, pull up all the surveillance footage you have of me so that I can relive my fondest memories. That's and to get multiple angles, too. That's just kind of creepy.
In 1973 terms, this is futuristic, wild, crazy stuff that could never happen. Mm-hmm. In 2019 terms, this is serious, you know, Black Mirror horror.
Yeah. Well, this maybe not even Black Mirror. It's just this is what's happening. I mean, you think about it. I have like three webcams just in my office that could be somebody could be recording that stuff right now. I don't know why they would. There's nothing exciting happening, including the. And so I don't care what that person who's sending me the email saying, we caught you doing the thing. Send us all your bitcoins. But, you know, we've got three web cameras just right here. Your cell phone, your iPads all have cameras built in. Your laptops have cameras built in. If you have surveillance cameras around your house or inside your house, those could be recording. So theoretically, if there was some, you know, benevolent major corporation out there that controlled all of the world, they could be picking up all these videos and audio signals and saving them somewhere to where in the future you could probably dial up and say, hey, I would like to see the video. I want to recall the fond memory that I had of Matthew and I sitting down to record the Legion Clubhouse, and it would pull up the visit tapes of me sitting in my darkened office. You know, in my underwear, talking with Matthew about Legion of Superheroes.
Don't let people know that we don't wear pants during this show. I mean,
I never wear pants.
That's a scary sentence ending. So anyway, back in the comic book.
So back in the imaginary world where mass surveillance is not a big deal, Chuck figures
kind of cute and kitschy.
Yeah, Chuck figures that if he's going out, he's going out with a bang, and he wants to ask Duo Damsel to marry him. And she, of course, says yes right away.
Absolutely. And then she screams off into the sky at the speed of sound to catch some sort of flying bird. I don't know.
Yeah, some weird phoenixes of some kind.
It's very strange. But yeah, it is a very sweet moment that is immediately undermined. And then, of course, we see her flying and trying to duplicate so that there are two of her to each catch one of these strange phoenixes, and she can't use her powers.
Wait a minute. Her powers have gone extinct as well, just like Chuck, both at the same time? Oh, Carrie Bates, what are you doing?
Our powers don't matter anymore, Superboy, because Chuck and I are dun-dun-dun quitting the Legion.
So, you know, what's really surprising is, you know, the Duo Damsel bouncing boy romance is really cool, and we've seen it grow throughout the years in the pages of this book. But quite honestly, I figured it was going to be Dream Girl and Star Boy who would be the first to get married.
I figured Dream Girl and Star Boy would be the first to have to get married. because Well, never mind. Not, you know, no judgments, nothing going on here. But yeah, it really does feel a little out of left field. And while there is a precedent for the Chuck Liu relationship and their romance, it's not as well developed as things like Ultra Boy, Phantom Girl, or Lightning Lad and Saturn Girl. Mm-hmm. And it feels a little out of left field. I'm happy. I'm glad that, you know, Chuck and Liu get to be together, but it feels a little out of left field, which also feeds into my expectation that Carrie is just trying to clear the decks and get rid of Legionnaires that he thinks are in. And there's more issues coming where that happens, where he's trying to get rid of Legionnaires that he thinks are not as cool or not as useful.
Which is interesting that you say that, because if he's clearing the deck of Legionnaires that he don't think are useful, he could have just cleared the deck or just had them walk off and be off panel. And everyone's asking, hey, has anyone seen Chuck and Duo Damsel? Well, you know, they're married, hubba hubba. But instead, when you get rid of the Legion members, you're going to have to fill those slots.
Right. Bronze Age DC, man. Everything has to have a deep philosophical, emotional meaning behind it. We're post Speedy now. We're post what have you done for the Blueskins? We are at a point where you have to explain these things. And the more melodramatic, frankly, the better. So you can't just walk them off. You have to set up a big dang wedding, and you have to have a whole thing where, oh my God, something's wrong with Duo Damsel. She's not actually all here.
Yeah, so that's really interesting, because now we're going to jump ahead just a moment, then I'm going to come back to the big wedding bit. Mm-hmm. But Duo Damsel kind of has a freak out and passes out, and they're like, oh, we're afraid she's going to die because she's not all here. And then we figure out the reason why she was kidnapped while she was on her secret mission, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Et cetera, et cetera.
But, Duo, and we've had this discussion before, I'm pretty sure, where when Duo Damsel is split and her doubles are separated from each other for a long period of time. Remember, one went off to go do a mission and the other one went off to go do another mission, and they were separated like by months or something. And so there's this question about whether they were going to come back together. And there was this whole mental breakdown or, you know, sickness that was going on because they were not whole. Right. This makes it feel like this is the first time that this has ever happened. And even if this is the first time it's happened, how come it didn't happen when the triple died?
See, that's important. There is a reference to Starfinger, by the way.
Starfinger. He's the man. The man with the star fingers. Sorry.
Anyway, yes.
They call him Starfinger.
Actually poisons the Duo Damsels, which makes them die when they're apart. But this does foreshadow some things, because you are correct. We had that whole question of, if they're separated for long periods of time, bad things do happen. And it eventually does become an ongoing thing. There are, in Lornu's future, some emotional problems that are coming up and some issues with the ability to streamline her multiple personalities, her multiple selves, into one mind. And eventually it becomes a very big thing. And if you remember your rebooted Legion, it actually becomes one of her major plot points, is that everyone else on her home planet doesn't have a problem with this. But in this iteration, being apart this long is bad, but it's actually Starfinger's poison that makes it so that this is going to be a fatal situation if they can't find the other Duo Damsel.
Okay, that makes sense. So in the meantime, let's go ahead and get married. They were going to have the wedding on Saturn, but Saturn was booked months ahead of time. The whole planet of Saturn is pre-booked. And really, that's kind of something that even in the 1970s, they're pointing out, that you shouldn't wait until the last minute to find a venue for your wedding ceremony or your get together or whatever. I did a little bit of research to find out what today, how early you should book. My wife and I got married at her parents' house in the backyard. We were married by Judge Love, so we didn't have to worry about any of this. But according to theknot.com, K-N-O-T, see, because you're tying the knot, they say, quote, generally, you should plan to book your wedding reception site at least a year to 9 months before your date. That means you should probably start researching and touring a month or two before that.
And if you want the exclusive heavy-duty Van Smoot house on Long Island, probably 2 years, and you may have to steal it from Stella's sister.
So, you know, the entire Legion has to slum it on Mars, And so they go to the posh Nix Olympia, the largest volcano in the solar system, which is really, really weird. And I had to go and do some research on this because the largest volcano on Mars is Olympus Mars, not Nix Olympica. However, Nix Olympica is the former name for Olympus Mons. That's what they called it in the 19th century, because apparently Nix Olympica means the Olympian snow. It's because they saw all the white up there, and the observers thought that it was just snow up there, so they called it the Olympus of snow. Right. But retired geosciences professor Steve Dutch says, quote, Nix Olympica, the Olympian snow, was a name given by 19th century visual observers. We now know that there's no snow, and the white spot seen at that location was a cloud. Mons, which is the Latin for mountain, is the correct feature label. There were several features named Mare, meaning sea, because they were dark. But since there's no seas on Mars, those terms too have been dropped. For example, the former Mare Sumerium is now Terra Sumeria. So Conan,
it's a high school with a Terra Sumeria.
Yeah, Conan has a spot in there. So I couldn't find the exact date. Even the Wikipedia page for Olympus Mons didn't have when this was dropped. But apparently, I would bet after Voyager passed by Mars. Which would only be about 4 or 5 years from this issue. So I thought that was really cool, because I was even scratching my head going, wait a minute, did they mess up? Was there a new volcano that erupted on Mars in the future? But no.
Did they just make it up?
No, they didn't. This is actual science, old science that has now fallen out of. It's kind of like if the Legion decided that Chuck and Lornu should go honeymoon on the 9th planet in the solar system. The 9 planets ice cream is even out of date. Nobody likes Pluto.
You're
not
sad
even Mickey
about
Mouse.
That Pluto thing.
Still. I am. So anyway, there's a big wedding ceremony. Duo Damsel looks fantastic in her wedding gown. And then we have a huge double page spread with like everybody but Mon-El and Phantom Girl, I believe, who have to stay behind, right? Isn't it Phantom Girl?
Mon-El and Shadow.
Oh, Shadow Lass.
Phantom Girl is actually the ring bearer.
That's right.
Or the gem bearer.
The giant gem. Yes. But when you look across this double page spread, you can see all of the other Legion members that are there. But there are also a bunch of other Legion or a bunch of other DC heroes or characters that are pictured, but are not Legion members. For example, I was really surprised to see John Jones in there. And so
I'm pretty sure John is an in-joke to it being on Mars.
That's what I thought, too, because apparently there's also Tars Tarkas there.
Yep.
But there's some other people.
Most of the crowd is the Legion of Superheroes. The substitute heroes are there.
Okay.
All 4 remaining heroes of Lalor.
Okay.
The 7 Wanderers.
We've met them. Right? Yeah.
We met them back in the Adventure Days at the tail end of the shooter run. The Tornado Twins,
right.
Rond Vidar. I think that's everybody. A Supergirl made it from the past, and I think all surviving Legionnaires at this point in time are on that page as well.
Yeah, so I was just really surprised, and I kind of got, though, John Jones, yes, because he's the Martian Manhunter, so yes, he would be there. But then it made me wonder, is the Martian Manhunter immortal? Not immoral, but immortal?
He is not immortal. However, this is not the last time we see him in the 30th century. A very, very elderly John Jones shows up in the Volume 4 Legion, the adult Legion that comes after this. It's in this continuity, but after this Legion jumps forward 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if that story references the fact that he's clearly here or not, but we do see John Jones in the 30th century.
Yeah, I just thought it was rather interesting to throw in a bunch of other people that, especially when they're spending so much time in these issues and in the next couple of issues saying, you know, Chuck Tane is really Bouncing Boy and Lornu is really Duo Damsel. And they kind of do this, and something that we had talked about way back in the 60s with how they kept mm-hmm. calling each other, you know, Karate Kid or Mon-El, or Mon-El's really his name, but, you know, calling them by their code names instead of their real names.
Mon-El is his code name. His real name is Larkand.
His real name is Bob Cobb. So there, meh.
That's not his real name. Shut up.
So anyway, Starfinger shows up.
Starfinger!
With the other Duo Damsel duplicate. And he's like, if they don't rejoin, if you don't give her to me now, they will all both die. And then, of course, I forget who it is. I think it's Chuck, or is it Lornu that's like, blacking out.
Chuck, because we find that Dave Cockrum not only draws Brainiac 5 kind of like Spock, Brainiac 5 knows a Vulcan nerve pinch. He literally nerve pinches Bouncing Boy, and Chuck's blacking out. Only time to drink this soda. Oh, God, no. This is plastic fluid. Why am I still drinking? What's wrong with me?
I have only blacked out twice in my life. One of them was one of those stunts where you try to, you know, hold somebody across their chest and make them pass out when I was in grade school, which was just a freaky experience in itself.
That's called murder.
I know, but
your grade school is bad.
I know, and there was a teacher that was watching it. He approved it, and I was like, okay, I'll do it. And then, yeah, passed out, and then, of course, they let me out, and I woke up right immediately. But the second time was when I was getting blood drained, and they didn't, or a blood draw taken, and they didn't do it right, and it was back in the day when needles freaked me out, and blood freaked me out even more, and I looked down and saw the blood running down my arm, and I was like, oh, that's all I said was, oh, and then woke up a minute later on the floor. Probably not a minute, but a couple seconds later. But yeah. No time did I have to say, uh-oh, I am blacking out now. Please, someone catch me before I hurt myself on the edge of this table.
No time to dodge. Only time to talk about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is an old comic trope, and I feel like, thankfully, this is 1970, well, on the stand 73, street date 74.
Right.
We're starting to see the end of that, thankfully.
Yeah. Well, it's not going to be the only time we see it in this issue, because we're going to get it at least one or more times in this month's episode.
We're getting to the end of it. This is interesting, though. They actually, the date of the wedding is October 28th, 2973.
Nice.
This book had a street date of October 25th. 1973.
Literally,
exactly 1,000 years in the future.
Yeah, no, I really like this when publishers get all their stuff together and are able to make these things land at the right point. They tried to do that with the Legion of Superheroes, the Brian Michael Bendis book, when, or actually it was in Action Comics, I believe, when they said, hey, today's date, you know, November 18th or whatever it was, October 18th or whatever it was, for that issue arriving is the date of the foundation of the Legion, which the book was delayed by a week for whatever reason. So the actual date that we had it in our hands was actually a week after the date it was originally supposed to arrive on. So if they had not missed up on their shipping, we would have been reading that date as the actual date of the day we had it in our hands. So for them in 1973 to have their act together, to get this book to show up, just a couple of days before the actual wedding, is pretty cool.
It is. And, you know, I really kind of enjoy that sort of thing. And I feel like I would have been even more impressed if it was the exact same day. But you also think, you know, hey, would that be too much? You know, is that too much to ask of a writer, especially a writer in 1973 who's just putting this together, you know?
And you also have to remember that New Comic Book Day in 1973 would have been very different because of how they would have shipped things out. I know when you and I were in college, New Comic Book Day for us was all on Thursday, while other people had it on Wednesday because of shipping. So if you're thinking moving things from East Coast all the way over to West Coast, some people may have actually hit it on the stands on the day of their wedding.
That's true.
Yeah. So anyway, we do find out that Starfinger, he takes both duo damsels, but he doesn't join them together. And even Superman is powerless to stop them because of his giant flying dragon. But Dr. Hanscom, you know, the real name for Starfinger, which is great. I'm glad people do that explanation for the reader. But I really hate the, as you know, his real name is Dr. Hanscom. Yes, we all know it. So why are you saying that?
Well, in their defense, the last time we saw Hanscom was Adventure Comics 336, which is almost 8-9 years ago at this point. So I'll give them half credit. I feel like it definitely did need to be explained, but the, as we all realize, that's definitely played.
Yeah, it's kind of hokey. But the reason why he wants to keep them separated is because he wants to read their electromagnetic signal, so that he can take their duplicate powers and make a duplicate of himself, so that instead of having the 5 fingers of death, he will now have the 10 fingers of death, and then duplicate them, and then be 20 fingers of death, and so on and so on and so on, until there is a hair product commercial about him coming out in a future episode.
You do know that he has two hands, right?
Yeah, but he always uses just the one hand that's gloved.
Starfinger.
Yeah.
That's because originally Starfinger, you may recall, as you know, Steven, Starfinger was originally Lightning Lad, and the powers came from his robot arm.
Yes. So
also, Starfinger's spaceship is a giant image of himself. And I just, in my head, I just hear Shrek saying, I wondered if he's compensating for something.
Yeah. Do you remember? Because I was thinking about this. There was, I want to say like maybe in 2010, maybe a little bit before that, they had that new Superman Batman team up mm-hmm. comic book that had the return of Supergirl to the DC universe at that time. And mm-hmm. The toy maker was part of that story or Toyman. And he built that giant composite Superman Batman rocket ship.
Yep.
So that's kind of what this made me think of. But yes, I agree. If you're going to build a rocket ship in your own image, number one, you better make sure that you are aerodynamic. And number two, it better not be compensating for some smaller problem.
I'm not saying that he has boobs right there on his helmet. I'm just saying, okay.
So in a surprise twist, ladies and gentlemen, in a surprise twist, there is a second Starfinger that shows up. Bye-bye. But turns out, it's the duplication machine didn't actually work. It was Superman in disguise the entire time. Or Superboy, I should say.
Yep. Superboy whooshed off, got the replica costume from the Legion's Hall of Trophies, which, by the way, that Hall of Trophies is going to come back very soon and bite them in the butt. Came around and pretended. He's like, hey, fake Starfinger is here, and I'm here, and we'll use our powers. Nya-ha-ha-ha. And then he just punches his lights out. Because there is no problem so big in a Cary Bates story that it cannot be punched by a Kryptonian.
Mm.
Yeah. And then Starfinger escapes, but...
Hey, Duo Damsel is back together, and Chuck and Lornu can go off and have their magical wedding. And we've talked about this before, about the... do they really... I mean, yes, it's a polyamorous relationship. Well, is it... So we've talked about this before, but is it a polyamorous relationship? Because Duo Damsel is the same person, and we've also established that when they split, they do have their own personalities or have their capabilities of having their own personalities in this original version of Duo Damsel. Now, again, the Archie Legion reboot shows them as having very distinct personalities, and in the three boot Legion.
Right.
They also have different personalities.
She's one girl who's been duplicated all over the whole planet.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit different there. And three of her have actually been excommunicated because they stayed away long enough that they were no longer
part of the Borg collective. Yeah. So I don't know. Would you say that this is a polyamorous relationship or not?
I'd say no, but it's definitely a science fiction take on it. Just like when you look at things like, well, we don't have any people of color, but we do have Brainiac 5, who's bright green.
Yeah.
I think they're touching on issues in a science fiction context and saying, well, this resembles this, wink, wink, wink. But I don't know if you can flat out call it that.
Well, and I wonder, too, because of the time period, you know, we are in the free love portion of American history, right? Or the societal history.
Swinging
70s. And they do make a fairly good argument that when the two of them are playing volleyball with Chuck, bouncing him back and forth, that there mm-hmm. is some play with one man, two women in that kind of, I don't want to say swinger mentality, but it kind of feels like that swinger mentality. And I only say that because the 70s, with a lot of free love and a lot of good sexy going on, we're going to see with Dream Girl coming up that they're not holding back on some of the stimuli that young boys might be interested in, including having two girlfriends or two wives.
Right. And, you know, they do both kiss him early on in the book. Mm-hmm. And he's like, who's lucky enough to have a girl kiss him twice at once? There's definitely some of that. I think it may be just sort of a simpler sort of, you know, Gail Simone said a few weeks ago, virtually every character is somebody's sexual fetish, probably their creator's. I just feel like there may be a little bit of appeal to somebody in the creative team of, hey, my wife is here, only there's two of her and she's awesome. And I get that. And on that level, it actually feels like a very, you know, kind of a pure, chaste little moment of, wouldn't it be great if the person you love was twice as much? So I think that you could definitely make the case. And I feel like in terms of looking for representation wherever you can get it, definitely so. You know, we talk about the Green Turtle, who was written by his creator as the first Chinese superhero, but the editor said no and the publisher said no. And 90 years later, everybody says, well, clearly this is what they intended, mm-hmm. so we're going to treat it as that.
Yeah.
I feel like you could make that argument.
Yep. Overall, I enjoyed this issue. It's good to see the wedding. Unfortunately, we get two heroes exit, and we also have a mysterious cloud that's floating around the Legion headquarters. Have you figured out who this mystery cloud is?
Yes, I have.
Well, of course, because we've already had...
If you enjoy the show, we would appreciate your support. You can find out more and become a Legion Clubhouse member at patreon.com/majorspoilers.
This is Superboy number 200. This is a big, big anniversary issue.
This is a big deal. Books, you know, don't always get to 200 issues.
Well, I'm wondering, you know, not only do we get an expanded story and we get a lot of content in this book, which I found very enjoyable, and we get to see Cary Bates writing, which I really enjoy his writing. I know it gets purple prosy, but I really enjoy it. We also get to see Dave Cockrum do his thing, but we're about to make an exit for Cockrum here in a short while. Yeah. But at the same time, it made me start thinking about anniversary issues. Is this the first big anniversary issue? Certainly it cannot be, because we've had Action Comics running this entire time.
Yep, it is not. And I actually thought to myself, well, as you said, maybe Action number 100 was the first big anniversary issue where they made a big deal about it. And it turns out, and this was something that I did not realize, the very first big anniversary issue. Do you know what year that came out?
I would say, gosh, it's got to be somewhere right around here, right? Like 1960. I mean, if we're looking at 100 issues, so 38, mm-hmm. Let's add 12 issues a month. Let's say it's 20 years. So 1958, 1960. Let's say that's the 100 issues of Action Comics.
It was 1942 when we saw our first big anniversary issue.
Really?
And it was actually Famous Funnies, which is the first...
Oh, yeah, the very first comic book.
Real comic book that we know of, yeah. They hit 100 issues in 1942.
Wow.
And their 100-issue spectacular had on the top of every page, in big red letters, 100-issue spectacular.
So I wonder, though, I mean, that's really cool, but I wonder, because would 50 issues be considered a big anniversary? I mean, Robin got introduced in, what, Batman number 40? Wasn't that the...
I don't even remember now. That sounds about right. Not in the 40s, though. We saw a few 100s. Marvel didn't exist yet, but DC and Fawcett were giving their 100th issues, especially Fawcett. The 100th issue of Captain Marvel, the 100th issue of Captain Marvel Adventures were kind of a big deal.
Okay.
But we didn't really see any increments of 50 until the mid-70s. Amazing Spider-Man number 150 was hyped as a big, big deal issue in 75. And then a couple of years later, Defenders Volume 1 hit issue number 50.
Yeah, Amazing Spider-Man. I have the poster of that, the 100th issue, and that's an issue you can't miss. Detective Comics 38 is the first appearance of Robin. I said 40 because it came out in 1940. So, that's really interesting about these celebrations. But do you think, I guess, Superboy hitting issue 200 is kind of is still a big deal, right? I mean, Famous Funnies was still not, I mean, it didn't make it to 200 issues, did it?
Yeah, I don't remember if it made it to 200, but it didn't make it much further past it. But Superboy at this point, remember, this book started in 49.
Yeah.
So it's more than 20 years. And of course, it's no longer really his book.
Well,
200 has a big cover logo that says Superboy starring the Legion.
Yeah.
But yeah, the 200th anniversary was kind of a big deal. And you look at, you know, a lot of the big books in the sort of that modern era. Of course, you see for a while in the 90s, every 25th issue was some sort of milestone.
Right.
You get 25 issues and you get a silver cover, you get a big thing, because lasting 25 issues in the 90s was kind of a big deal. You look at 1983, X-Men number 175 which is where the increments of 25 really start to kick in. But you get to a point now where lasting 12 issues is sometimes something that they consider to be a double-sized big deal. So,
should we save the big anniversaries for the 100 issues, or should we do it on the 50 issues?
I think you should do them on the 25s because, frankly, in the modern parlance, getting 100 issues is extremely rare.
I know. That's why I think that that should be super, super special.
Especially if you're doing 100 issues without a relaunch. Remember, Squirrel Girl just did her issue number 50, but that's literally over four volumes of Squirrel Girl.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the fact that this book went 200 issues in 1973 was definitely noteworthy. But I think if we tried to wait for 200 issues in the modern publishing, we'd all just fall over and die.
And I guess in the way that modern publishers, any time that they can do a big anniversary moment, that means they get to plug that, they get to hype that, they get to sell potentially more issues. But I don't know. I guess I'm in that camp of, hey, do it on the centennials. If you can make it that far, you have a reason to bark and crow and celebrate. But, you know, don't make us such a big deal when you hit issue 25 or issue 50 or issue 75. Because that's like, for most comics, that's every two years, you're doing a celebration.
You realize that Marvel actually celebrated Captain America number 50, Captain America number 600, and Captain America number 1 within an 18-month span.
Yeah, no, right? So maybe you guys want to rethink that policy.
Yeah.
Superboy number 201. The Betrayer from Beyond. Published March-April 1974. Written by Kerry Bates with art by Dave Cochran. Synopsis. There's a spy in the latest Legion tryouts, and the only one who can save them is already dead.
Oh, Matthew, now that we have NRG1, and we have Duo Damsel and Bouncing Boy out of the way, we need to hire three more Legionnaires, or I'm sorry, recruit three more Legionnaires. They're paid, so they get hired. If you get paid by the Legion of Superheroes and the United Planets, you are hired. So we're going to get and look for three new Legion members in this issue. That's a great way to follow up a big anniversary issue.
Tryouts! We get new Legionnaires! Except we kind of don't!
No, because we get introduced to Porcupine Pete, who is instantly rejected because he doesn't know how to contain his quills, and they go flying out in all directions. We also get introduced to Infectious Lass, who is essentially a Typhoid Mary type character. She can make
you sick from anything.
And then we also get introduced to the Molecular Master. Now, obviously, Porcupine Pete and Infectious Lass are rejected. I'm pretty sure they come back as substitute heroes, correct?
They do, but not for almost 10 years. They're actually out of the public eye entirely until the Ambush Bug issue of DC Comics Presents in 83.
Oh, that's crazy.
They are actually the only post-Silver Age additions to the substitute heroes to really stick.
Yeah, because I remember reading Infectious Lass and seeing her in the comics in, you know, the 80s before the crisis hit and going, oh, this is kind of cool. So that's interesting that these two, and Porcupine Pete, I think, has a very different look than way he's portrayed here.
Porcupine Pete is actually, in fact, Infectious Lass too, made it to the Legion of Superheroes cartoon.
Yeah, that's right. That's the other place where I remember seeing her. And I think Mike Allred, if I'm not mistaken, really does a pretty good Infectious Lass character.
Yeah, I really like the version of her from the Unexpected series a few years ago by Cliff Chang.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a Hubba Hubba Zoot Zoot moment.
Oh, really? Well, that's interesting considering that she makes you super sick. Or can
and
make you super sick.
If you look at the sleeves of her...
yes, it's like dripping mucus.
Yeah, it's supposed to look like... snot.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's gross. And she makes Starboy very sick, like you do.
Oh, how about a little fever, Scarecrow? How about a little taste of the flu? Ooh, I'm sorry. But I think I overdid it as he's doubled over trying to make his way to the bathroom.
By what both of these heroes in their first appearance do show up later. Interestingly, though we've never seen Molecular Master before, we actually know about him, and he has been referenced in a previous issue.
Oh, really?
Back in the day, remember the Adult Legion story?
Mm-hmm.
Where they were in the Hall of Dead Heroes?
Oh, right.
And in the Hall of Dead Heroes, we saw Reflecto. Reflecto was killed in a duel with the Molecular Master.
Interesting. That's really interesting.
Adult Legion story, this character name came up. And so now, maybe, I don't know, 5 years later, we're seeing a character appear. And if you are, you know, a savvy reader, which I'm sure there were three guys who remembered that name from Adventure 354, they went, oh, no, we know this guy is bad because he's got the name of a villain from that other continuity. So
yeah. So that's also interesting, too, because as I mentioned in the previous issue, they're starting to and really starting to push hard, especially in this anniversary, because now Legion is starting to take over the Superboy title. They're really starting to push first names. And so every time someone's name gets dropped, they're like, that's the secret name of so-and-so. But we are also starting to see the editor's notes saying, hey, go and check out issue blah, 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 blah for what's going on here, which I also think is really fascinating.
Well, that's actually coming around at a time when there is perhaps for the first time a reliable secondary market for comics.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you couldn't do that in 1954 because there was nobody selling the books. But by this point, there are going to be secondary stores. They're actually I believe the first comic conventions are coming up around this time.
Yep.
So referencing those issues and expecting that people might be able to find them in a reliable fashion actually starts to make sense here.
Yeah. And so Porcupine Pete and Infectious Lass are, told to take a hike. But right. Molecular Master is going to be moved ahead. And unfortunately, he has some ideas of his own, and that mysterious cloud is trying to stop him. But unfortunately, he can't. Apparently, he wants to get inside the minds of the Legion members to kind of control them because he also wants to get into the trophy room.
Yep.
But he can't. He can't. It cannot penetrate any of the Legion's bodies or memories or minds because their rings are emitting some kind of energy. That this other being, this cloud being, can't penetrate, or it's the same kind of energy. That the rings give off that the cloud also gives off, and so it's a real conundrum of what he can do. Ah, I know. How about I infiltrate the mind of the Molecular Master because he's not a Legion member yet and he doesn't have a ring, so I should be able to go in and take control of his body.
But it doesn't work because he's not a human being.
Bum, bum, bum.
And
it turns
out
he's an android. And it turns out that he is there, the Molecular Master is there to steal the Miracle Machine. Now, the Miracle Machine we've talked about before.
Yep.
But because basically it's a wish machine. Whatever you wish happens. And the Miracle Machine wants to be able to kill the Legion of Superheroes and I guess become a real boy or something. He's been secretly exhaling noxious gas to knock everyone out in the building, including Superboy.
Yep.
But only this mysterious cloud of energy has one thing in his mind, and that's to get back into the power suit that NRG-1 was wearing when he made the ultimate sacrifice.
Yeah, it wasn't very ultimate. It was more of a penultimate sacrifice.
Yes,
but yes, NRG is back, and he has, and this is interesting, using the power of the Miracle Machine, which implies, and I want to state this outright, the Legion of Superheroes put an impenetrable force field around the suit of a guy that they barely knew, but they did not put that same force field around the most dangerous weapon in the universe, allowing NRG to pop in, use his Miracle Machine powers to reconstruct his suit, get inside it, and attack the Molecular Master, and also make sure that the gas wasn't actually knockout, or wasn't actually a murder gas, but a knockout gas.
Yes. So, okay, here's a problem that I'm having here in this issue.
Okay.
Didn't they decide that the Miracle Machine was so dangerous that they were going to embed it into a slab of unobtainium?
Inertron,
that's what it was.
They did decide that. It apparently didn't happen.
Well, so then my next question is, they did put it into that slab of inertium or whatever it's called.
Inertron.
Yes, unobtainium. Mm-hmm. That was under the old Legion headquarters, right?
Okay.
If they moved into the new Legion headquarters and they have to build this bigger trophy room, maybe that's when they decided that we're just going to put this in a glass case and hope nobody understands what this thing is, even though the plaque says Miracle Machine. Could that be of what happened?
I'll tell you what actually happened, and this is the canonical truth of what happened. Carrie Bates forgot.
Yeah, no, I understand.
But yeah. And interestingly, they make an explanation of the change because NRG's powers were basically the ability to use his energies and duplicate a lot of Legionnaire powers. By absorbing a giant molecule from Molecule Master, he actually powers up and becomes so much more powerful that he can smash the robot's face with one kick. And the sound effect of nuclear energy shooting out of your cool Corsair pirate boot is slack.
By striking me down, I've become more powerful than ever before. I am NRG, and I am back. And oh, by the way, you did say that I was going to be a member of the Legion, right? Right before I blew myself up. I'll take that membership now. Thank you.
Thank you. Drive through. And in that last panel, he's facing the Legionnaires. They're like, can it be? Is he back from the dead? And he's like, boy, that's tough. But Dave Cockrum draws my butt really well.
Yes. Yes, he does. Which then transitions right into the second story. So not only do we have the Legionnaire Bride of Starfinger in 200, but in 201, we get two Legion stories. And the second one is The Silent Death, which is, you know, surprisingly in this issue, not blood pressure.
No, nor is it the silent but deadly. It is, in fact, the third, I believe, example of Karate Kid ignoring the fact that Dream Girl's precognitive abilities are always right.
So
they are never, ever wrong, except when they are, which is about as often as they are right.
So a Legionnaire is going to die, and it's going to be someone who's in the Visitapes observatory, part of the surveillance state that we talked about in the previous issue.
Yep.
But, Dream Girl, here's what I wrote in my notes. Jeebus, the Dream Girl costume is a bit of hubba hubba. I'll be in the bathroom for at least 10 minutes.
Yeah, my notes literally say, and I quote, Dream Girl's nightie is wow. Okay, there's a man named William Thies.
Yes.
William Thies worked for Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
And his belief was that a costume is perceived as sexy not because of how brief it is, but because of how fragile it seems. It's called the Thies titillation theory.
Mm-hmm.
And if he saw Dream Girl in her nightie, he would explode.
Well, this is really good that you bring this up because, again, remember what we were talking about just a minute ago with Free Love and going into the swinging sexy 70s. If you go and look at some of the photos and video or tape that exists of Club 54, or if you go and look at some of the other nightclub or the disco era costumes, and really even some of the clothes that people wear to the club today, it's very reminiscent of literally hanging precariously off the breasts, being very, very revealing all up and down the body to show off the forearm to the extent where any moment you think that dress is going to fall off and reveal all the goods.
Yeah.
To put it bluntly. And that is this costume that Dream, or at least her bedroom clothes. I'm guessing she sleeps in her superhero costume, but that is essentially the costume that she wears. She also has this great pose when she walks and she wakes up, where she's kind of got the screaming face that kind of reminds me of the Betty Page cover or the inside cover when Cliff Secord busts in on Betty Page or Betty in the Rocketeer magazine. It also reminds me of what's her name? Mistress of the Dark, Elvira.
Elvira
has some poses like this. This is a pose is very cheesecakey. And is used again or a pose very, very similar to this. And I couldn't find the original source. I'm sure it's some 1950s scream, you know, queen kind of thing. But this pose is used again and again and again with women who are barely dressed and used as a titillation factor, as you're talking about Thies. So, you know, this is one of those weird things where we've talked about how like Saturn Girl's costume may be a little bit too revealing or maybe make you a little bit too uncomfortable, or Phantom Girl with her costume with all the holes in it. When you look at Dream Girl, this is super sexy.
This is super sexy.
And I really think that as we're starting to see the easing up of the Comic Code authority and what is allowed and what is not allowed during this time period, this is still under Comic Code authority, mind you, but a lot of things are starting to slip through post Spider-Man's cocaine incident.
Well, actually, I believe it was Harry Osborn and heroin.
Well, but I mean, it was Spider-Man dealing with one of his friends on drugs. So we're starting to see that grip being loosened on the comics code, which allows for more of this cheesecake art to start appearing in comic books.
And something that's fascinating that I'm kind of surprised they got away with, when Dream Girl is lying in her big double bed asleep, before she sits up, you see a lump. There is another person in her bed, and just the slightest hint of a brown crew cut.
Interesting.
And Dave Cockrum has said that when he drew this, that is Starboy.
Well, see, and that's why
Starboy and Dream Girl are sharing a bed in this story. And I'm like, and they got away with this in a comic in 1974.
Well, and again, think of the time period and everything that we've talked about where Chuck is in a three-way. You've got barely covered breasts on Dream Girl, and she is free loving it up without the consent of marriage, or without this idea that you have to be married before you can have sex. It makes perfect sense. I mean, it really does make perfect sense.
I can see it.
Yeah. So anyway, it's not Dream Girl, and it's not Karate Kid that's going to die, or is it? But maybe it's the two people that they're watching on the monitors.
Right.
And so we go and see our two heroes that are out in the field suddenly coming across. It's Lightning Lad and Phantom Girl.
Mm-hmm.
And they get attacked, but they're out in the Sahara Desert. And a giant fallout twister appears, which could kill them. And I just want to know what happened on Earth to where you would have tornadoes that are called fallout twisters. And the only thing that I can think that makes this have any sense is that Millennium, Legion of Superheroes Millennium series, where they kind of cover the entire history of the future of DC Comics, to where you have the time period that is a post-apocalyptic Command D. And so maybe there's still some radiation floating around that's causing these giant twisters. I don't know. It's one of those things that in the future, everything is radiation, you know, just like the Doc Brown said in Back to the Future.
Right. Because of all of the fallout from the nuclear
war. Yeah, from all the fallout from the nuclear war. So seeing, you know, tornado fallout twisters, I'm just like, what happened in the future?
You don't know. You don't want to know.
I think I was still too preoccupied by Dream Girl's costume or lack thereof that it turns out that you had to read something that happened earlier that day to know who the real person who was about to die was in this issue.
Yep. And this issue does also, in that Lightning Lad sequence, give us a good look at the new Lightning Lad costume that I guess technically debuted during the wedding last issue, but it's for a very long time. It becomes the canonical, the Lightning Lad suit. It's the blue suit with the white boots, the white gloves, the white inlay through the inner legs, and then the bolts crashing over his shoulders. This is actually basically the costume that we see in, I think, every Legion story to date. The Legion cartoon used a variant of it. I'm almost certain that the brand new Legion book that just launched last month is using a variant of this costume from 1974. So
yeah,
it's really actually pretty cool.
Turns out,
a great looking suit. It's amazing.
Yeah, no, I really dig it. Turns out that it's actually Karate Kid who is going to die, because he was in a knife fight where he was using super karate to fend off the attackers. Turns out, though, that one of the attackers had a laser knife and Karate Kid didn't feel it penetrate his spleen. And he's been bleeding out this entire time, bleeding internally.
That's what you get for bringing karate to a knife fight.
Exactly.
Speaking of Karate Kid, this story is the first time that I can recall them really playing up a very Asian look to Val's face.
Yeah, there is a close up where he does start to look a little Asian, but his nose is at a weird angle and it just kind of messes up the illusion to make you wonder if it's just bad drawing.
But if you look at those previous issues, there's definitely an attempt here by Cockrum to give a very epicanthic look to his face. And it's not too long from now when a Legion writer that we've talked about a lot comes back to the book, spoilers, and actually writes Karate Kid's origin story, revealing that Val is in fact, and always has been, quote unquote, always has been, half Asian. So
yeah, but
whether or not Dave knew that was coming, or whether it was something, I feel like it's something that the Legion fandom was into. But whether or not that was there or not, it's definitely seen in these issues. Also,
I guess I always look at it as being implied because he was in Japan and he had been taught super karate from a very young age.
Yep, but they've never actually attempted to show it visually. Mm. And we finally get a really good look for the first time that I can remember at Dream Girl's star-shaped birthmark on her cheek.
Yeah.
She has that Marilyn Monroe birthmark. The first place I can find it actually visually in the book is Legion 199. We really get a close look at it here, and it's just a big five-pointed star on her face. That was not there in her first appearances. I went back and looked.
Right. Do you think do you ever think she has to go, my star birthmark is up here?
I don't know, but I imagine that at some point she had to go just put it right there with the laser boys because it's definitely something that was added intentionally.
Yeah. Interesting. So there you go. We get three stories in one issue of the Legion of Superheroes this month. So that's really cool.
Pretty cool.
Yeah. That wraps it up for another Legion Clubhouse. Thank you so much for downloading and checking us out this week. Matthew, what did we learn?
We learned that sometimes, even if you're a Legionnaire forever, when you and your boyfriend who bounces get thrown out of the book, you don't even get to be the hero of the story.
I think we also learned that double page splashes take up a lot of time, not only in the creation of the art, but also for the readers who have to go through and try to figure out who everyone is in that panel.
And I think that we learned that Dave Cockrum draws a really great looking flight ring.
Some valuable lessons learned this week in the Legion Clubhouse. We will be back next time to share more stories of the teenagers from the future. But until then, I'm Stephen Palpatine.
And I'm Feast Titillation Lad.
The Legion Clubhouse is a production of Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC, and is produced by Steven Schleicher. Your hosts were Matthew Peterson and Steven Schleicher. You can follow Matthew at Mighty King Cobra and Steven at Major Spoilers. You can follow this podcast on Twitter at Legion Clubhouse. If you have questions or comments, send them to podcast@majorspoilers.com. I'm Jason Inman. Until next time, eat it, Grandpa.
Major Spoilers Podcast, copyright 2009.
Major Spoilers Podcast, copyright 2010.
Major Spoilers is copyright 2011. Major Spoilers is copyright 2012.
Major Spoilers is copyright 2013.
Major Spoilers is copyright 2014.
This podcast is copyright 2015 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.
This podcast is copyright 2016 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.
This podcast is copyright 2017 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.
This podcast is copyright 2018 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.
This podcast is copyright 2019 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.
This podcast is copyright 2020 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.